This is the Experience Points Podcast, episode number 122, for the week of March 23rd, 2011.
Welcome back to the Experience Points Podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name's Scott Jester.
And we are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of video games and culture. And for any new listeners to the show, a quick rundown of what we do here at the EXP Podcast. Every week we go online and find some choice article or topic or theme from that sort of week on the internet, and we bring it back to you and share some of our thoughts in short, about 30-minute episodes. Today, we're bringing you an article by Michelle Baldwin from pioneerproject.net, and the article is titled, Are Gamers Selfish? And this is a short, sort of exploratory piece about her response to the look she gets when she tells people she plays video games and plays them, not excessively, but quite often.
Yeah.
And some of the looks that she gets tends to be a sort of, oh, really? This is how you spend your time.
Cocked eyebrow.
Yeah. And this is something that we've touched on, I think, here and there throughout the podcast.
Yeah.
Any serious member of the gamer community, if you were to call it that, I think deals with this sort of this sort of occurrence. And especially it's common with family members,
yeah,
and people who you've never met before. When you tell them, oh, you know, what do? I play games. It's one of my hobbies. It's one of my pastimes.
Yeah.
So before we get into the article, I'm curious, as someone who writes about games and thinks about them critically, what sort of looks do you get when you tell someone you've never met before, one of the things that I do is play a lot of games and think about them and write about them and spend so much of my time involved in that?
It's one of the, I feel like things are changing a bit, whereas maybe a few years ago, I don't know how, you know, just ballpark it 10 years ago or so, people would just kind of laugh a little bit, or like, oh, are you serious?
that type of thing. Yeah.
And now it's gotten to the point where even if people don't really take it very seriously, you can tell that they're honestly trying to pretend to take it seriously.
Yeah.
Like, they're trying to feign interest in a polite way. Like, kind of as if it's good.
You know? Do you think that they're not actually interested then? Is that
I don't know if they're actually interested or not, but like they'll do that thing where it's like, oh, really? Really? That's very interesting. You know, yeah, that sort of like kind of, they might not really care that much, but it's gotten to the point where maybe it's widespread enough that they feel socially obligated to not just write you off right away.
Yeah, they don't just leave the room in disgust. Exactly, yeah. That's not something that happens. You know, I just actually had this experience this last week at a wedding I went to. I told someone, oh, this is what I do. And the response was like a little confused look, like not sure what that means.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. So, like, what's the best game ever? And like, you know, that's not really what I do.
Then you were like, Peggle, obviously. Yeah.
The other response that I get, and I think this is indicative of a changing landscape of how many people play games, is this almost feeling as if they think that I'm part of this elite group. It's almost the exact opposite of seeing me as selfish, but seeing me as someone who is almost like has special access to this world that they're so interested in.
Yeah.
Because I get people who I'll tell them, I play a lot of games and I write about games, and their response is, oh, like Angry Birds? Because they're excited to share with me, I play Angry Birds.
Yeah,
does this mean
yeah.
that we share something now? Can we have this connection?
Yeah.
Or at an IGDA event during GDC, I was chit-chatting with the bartender at this place in the city, and I told him, like, oh yeah, this is a gaming thing that we're all here for. And he goes, oh cool, well, you know, I don't play much games, but I play a lot of World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
And then just starts going off about World of Warcraft, and we have this long conversation, and like, you know, he gives me a drink without me having to pay, which was awesome.
Fat loots.
And I get the sense that it's not something that he tells a lot of his friends.
Yeah.
And it's not something that he feels like he's a member of the gaming community at large, because his only experience is with World of Warcraft.
He probably doesn't read our site or listen to our podcast. Yeah, you know, he has no idea.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely not. He probably doesn't read anything about games, but he does play a lot of WoW, and he plays it with friends, and he sees that as a sort of like, this gives me credibility in the new world that is somehow defined by games in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like Michelle has those experiences very often.
And to be honest, I don't have those experiences very often, but I do see that as a sort of growing occurrence.
Yeah.
When talking with people who aren't as familiar with games as you and I.
Yeah. I mean, we can go through a couple of the points that she brings up, and one of them is that people see it as selfish because it's a solitary endeavor. And I think that's pretty interesting, especially in light of kind of how the medium is changing right now. Because, you know, I guess there was a point in there, especially maybe late 80s and through the 90s, where huge marquee games were single-player focused, or at least that was the perception of them. Yeah. Like, they had moved out of the arcades, so it wasn't maybe as social, and into the living room where it was just player and TV type thing.
Yeah. It does. It is somewhat solitary, though, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of the games we play are, even the newest ones.
Yeah. I mean, even something like that I was just mentioning, Angry Birds, that's still a solitary experience. I mean, you're playing it in public spheres quite often, but I think that perception still exists, and to some extent it's founded. A lot of the times when we're gaming by ourselves, or if we're gaming with others, it's through a digital connection. They're not in the room.
Yeah.
You know, it's couch co-op isn't all that common.
Yeah.
So even if you're playing in a map of like 16 versus 16 people, it's still considered a solitary experience. And to some extent, that's true.
Why do you... I was thinking about this when she raised the question, then what differentiates it from when people really enjoy reading or really enjoy watching TV or something? Because you're not doing, especially reading. I mean, it's very hard to read with multiple people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... What is it then that maybe... And I don't know if this is just a perception that it feels like we are, you know, players are looked at as more solitary creatures, or if it's just... I don't know, maybe we've just internalized it a little
bit. Yeah, I was thinking about that.
Yeah.
I have two responses. My first is that, one, it's just a time thing, right? People are more used to television and reading.
Yeah.
They do it themselves. It's not seen as something exclusive or
solitary. It's just like a normalized thing.
Yeah, it's a normalized thing. Yeah. The second thing is, I think there's this sense that when someone is playing a game, they become immersed, right? Mm. We have this image in our head of someone who is just... eyes open wide, they're drooling at the mouth, there's Cheeto stains on their fingers and lips. You know, they're so immersed in the situation that they've forgotten what reality is like.
Yeah.
And I think you get the sense when watching television and reading books that, well, you're not that far removed.
Mm-hmm.
You might get enthralled by a piece of literature.
Yeah.
But if someone says, hey, will you go get this? You don't have to say, wait, I gotta find a save point.
Hey, the house is on fire. Hold on, I'm on level 7.
Yeah. that doesn't exist. That doesn't happen as frequently. And certainly there's not cliches around it.
Mm.
But, you know, I think we're fighting a losing battle if we're always trying to compare ourselves and justify games as non-selfish by saying, well, if games are selfish, then so are books and television.
Yeah.
You know?
Especially since there's those stereotypes that exist in that. I mean, you know, the nerdy kid that always has his face in the book, you know, that is kind of oblivious to the world passing them by.
Yeah, and, you know, certain types of literature, sci-fi and fantasy, get that stereotype a bit. Comic books sure as hell still do.
Yeah.
And I think television has some of those stereotypes as well. You know, if someone's just immersed in Lost or Fringe or something, I think you still get the sense that there's this nerdy sort of solitary experience there.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking about this, the solitary versus community thing, in just a sheer numbers perspective. I had read an excerpt from an interview with someone who worked at Zynga, a pretty high up, maybe even the CEO, and he was saying that he actually came from a traditional games background, like he worked at EA or something like that.
Yeah.
And even he, his group of friends, only maybe like 30% of them had an Xbox.
Yeah.
And this is someone who runs a video game company.
Right.
Like, there's definitely a numbers game here. And his argument was that everyone has a Facebook account, or everyone could have a Facebook account. easily and for free. Whereas, like, getting an Xbox or maybe a really nice PC is something that you really have to go out of your way to do, in a way that you don't have to go out of your way to watch Lost because you already have a TV, you already have all the equipment.
But I think there's an important cultural rift here when she's talking about the look someone gives them, right? I think you can still get the look that people give towards Michelle, thinking that what she does is selfish, even if that person plays Facebook games.
Mm.
You know, because Facebook games are seen as this thing, oh, I do it in the background, I kind of just do it nonchalantly.
Yeah.
It's not a serious thing. I mean, the issue, I think, is between people who self-identify as gamers and people who do not self-identify as gamers, not between people who actually play or don't play games, since that divide is lessening every day.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, the self-identification thing strikes me as something that, like, makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Because then if you already think of yourself as having certain behaviors, then it's much easier to recognize it in other people.
Right.
But I'm not sure if the ubiquity of Facebook does anything to necessarily bridge those two communities.
Yeah, that's exactly what... Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but I mean... Because one of the things, like, the selfishness that I get is... That is maybe, it's also maybe a literacy thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you first start talking about a game, even like World of Warcraft, like, I don't really know that much about World of Warcraft. And if people around me start talking about, wow, it's, you know, it's
just like selfish bastards.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, maybe, you know that weird feeling you get when everyone around you is speaking a different language that you don't speak?
Yes. You mean absolutely no comprehension whatsoever?
Yeah, or maybe you can pick out bits and words here and there, but, you know, not enough to actually converse. When we start talking about video games around folks, or even a single person that can't instantly bring a mental picture of an Xbox controller, like, where is the Y button on an Xbox controller? Quick.
Yeah.
You know, like, they are not fluent in that. And so it kind of seems there's an exclusivity, I think.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think... It's interesting to point out, because it's not just them now. It's not them against us.
Yeah.
We do our part in creating this cult of exclusivity that we then sort of thrive in. And a lot of ink has been spilt on this subject of the way that gamers kind of see themselves as gamers and therefore lock others out of that experience.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to note, if people see our medium as selfish, then to some extent it's because... It looks like we're off doing something by ourselves and not paying attention to everybody else. Like, we don't care about anything else than what we're doing.
And to me, the little fight or maybe contest or maybe just misunderstanding that is going on between social games and traditional games is an extension of that. You know, it's people trying to figure out where the boundaries are between those two sets of people.
Yeah. But I think you get a mini conflict, though, in that exact discourse, right? Mm-hmm. I think you have developers who aren't designing for social games having a backlash against social games because they see them as selfish game designers, especially the ones that are looking just to make a huge profit. You know?
The
sort of antagonism against Zynga and some of the larger Farmtown-like games, I think stems from a constant struggle that all game developers and designers and critical thinkers and heavy players have of, am I doing the best I can and not being a selfish person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we talked about social gaming rants a while back during our GDC roundup, but I think the responses by people like Brenda Brathwaite was very much the commentary saying, look, I'm not selfish.
Yeah.
I am making social games, but I also can make them ethically.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. It's something that the social games, I think, can help because... You know, we were talking about the language and the literacy of games. When you have a hobby that is more integrated into daily life, like if you're a race car driver or something,
I'm a race car driver.
You can talk to most people. Most adults will have a sense of what it must be like because they have been in cars most of their lives and because they've driven most of their lives. Like, they might not have ever driven, you know, a Maserati. They might not have ever driven 200 miles per hour, but they have a sense of what it means to take a turn that quickly or what it means to be able to react so quickly in a fast-moving vehicle. Right. And so if we have this large base of people that play social games and are used to playing maybe light RPGs on Facebook and the concept of an adventure game or even just something as simple as a match 3, there are concepts in those very simple games that extrapolate into much more complicated games.
Yeah.
So once those social games become more ubiquitous, it will be like the race car driver versus the commuter relationship, you know?
But does that get rid of the selfish dilemma? Because I look at race car drivers, right? I have some idea about what it must be like to be a race car driver.
Yeah.
My sister worked for a race car driver for a while, for example. It's still, I see race car driving as one of the most selfish professions around.
Well, I mean, that's just because of, like, an economic and you know, I mean, they're making money, right? Like, they're...
Right, but I think when it comes down to it, there's still a discussion about the frivolity of that medium, that form of entertainment, right? Look, I'll be frank and honest here.
Yeah.
I look down on people who watch NASCAR.
Oh!
You know, in general, when I, the idea of... people spending an entire day at a track watching a car just go around in circles 150 times, I find that mind-boggling. I have no idea why anyone would do that.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who, you know, partakes in a medium that others see as selfish, I think I have a bit more tact and I won't usually call people out, or I can understand the sort of actual experience of racing itself.
Mm-hmm.
But from a third-person perspective of the whole field, it still comes off as having that selfish divide. I still see it as something that's kind of, you know, solitary, unnecessary, and to some extent worthless.
Huh. But I mean, you don't necessarily feel that way about all of racing. Like, how about horse racing? It's just watching a bunch of horses run in a circle. Like,
that's true.
You know, like, I mean, or human racing. It's a bunch of humans running in a circle. Like,
yeah, and even I have a lot more respect for race car drivers who do long.
Well, you like, maybe you like, you know, Formula One or something like that versus NASCAR.
Yeah, it's the complexity of the act, right? And I guess when I see something that's so simple, I almost see it as unethical inherently simply because they're not trying very hard.
Mm.
You know, there's almost a sense of, if you can prove to me that what you do is complex or valuable in a myriad of ways, then I'm more likely to set aside my biases. And that might be something that we...
That's where I think the social game stuff is coming in. Because when you make a huge road trip from the Bay Area to LA, you're driving for like 8 hours or something. It could be really hot, and then you realize, wow, those NASCAR people do exactly that.
Yeah.
But at like 200 miles per hour, and people are trying to hit them. It's like it is kind of boring to watch. But once you have enough mundane experience, you can kind of see what's going on. Oh, you know, this actually isn't just. You know, frivolous. It's not just a throwaway. So maybe if my hope would be, if Facebook and lighter social games tend to prime people, like, you might not have the exact experience you would get playing Fallout 3, but if you have a similar experience, like, wow, I spent X amount of hours on Facebook RPG Lite trying to level up my character, and it was only 5 hours. Can you even imagine the amount of time you have to spend in Fallout to get to level whatever? You know, like, there's a certain respect that, and understanding, I guess, that I hope it would foster.
This is funny,
I don't know
because
if it's true or not.
Because what you're saying is one way to make people stop thinking we are partaking in a selfish act is by convincing them that what we do is not easy, but hard and complex and difficult and varied. And
yeah, I mean, that's one way. And the other way is like the polar opposite of what I was just arguing, is that it's not a mystic language, right? It's just practice.
Yeah. But
it's not selfish to want to be good at something, but it's selfish to maybe close yourself off.
Which, to bring back to the racing example, you know, a lot of people can drive, but very few people say, well, I don't want to put in the work that it takes to become a NASCAR driver, regardless of how much they believe they could do it, given the time and the money. Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think that's a really interesting point. I hadn't thought about it that way.
How much of it do you think is just maybe marketing or business culture or something? I was thinking about the recent... All the stuff around EA's, well, I guess for the past few years, EA has been kind of not that great in portraying gamers as not selfish or not self-centered or just kind of antisocial.
Yeah.
You know, like the Dead Space, your mom will hate this, or
your mom would hate this is a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
Because it's setting up this exclusivity barrier. Like, what I do is nothing will ever join your mother's interests and my interests.
And not only that, it's I'm just doing this to kind of gross people out.
Yeah.
Like, it's you're doing this, you know, for your pleasure of grossing folks out.
Yeah.
I just don't know. Do you think that there's some kind of do you think there's some kind of power that they have, or is that just within our little sphere? Like, we're the only ones annoyed at that? Or do you think that's reaching out to folks that don't even play?
I mean, I think it's a bit of both. I think you people who do pay attention to that do build up that expectation that that's what gamers have in mind when they're playing games as well. Uh-huh. I think the other side of the coin is a sort of mysticism, right? Like, Homefront ads are all over San Francisco.
Yeah, that's true.
Showing images of the Golden Gate Bridge destroyed and whatnot. A lot of people don't know what that is. They'll just look at it and they'll mumble to themselves, and someone might mention it's for a video game. Mm. But you get the sense that I'm not marketing towards you. This is something that might pique your interest, but it's not for you.
Mm.
So I think you get two sides. One, if you pay attention, I mean, this, of course, is from the perspective of someone who doesn't play games, right?
Mm.
If you pay attention to marketing, the image you get is one of gamers doing it just to be doing it, right? Just to get a kick and be sort of selfish and have their exclusivity experience. The other is not knowing what's going on, and then when you hear that it's for a video game, feeling even more alienated from the entire process.
Yeah, because it's something that you'll never be interested in anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I don't know what I don't. I'm trying to figure out better ways to change it, other than my like weird utopia of social and traditional.
Well, it's funny that you were talking about the sort of showing the complexity of what you actually do.
Yeah.
It's the exact opposite of what you want to do in marketing a video game, especially if you're marketing it to people who aren't huge gamers.
Yeah.
You know, if the Homefront ad was like, we're very difficult and you'll have to learn all of these skills in order to succeed, no one's going to want to be like, oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
No, you want to express the simplicity of the act, because that draws people in, because then they think it's easy.
Mm.
And for gamers, maybe it is easy, but
yeah,
I think maybe there's that constant struggle between showing yourself as a really accessible medium, but also showing yourself as worthy of complex interest and play
style. And contributing stuff to a broader population besides yourself and your small, you know, niche community of folks.
Right. I mean, proving that games are culturally significant to people who don't play games requires a dumbing down of that and kind of working against that very intent.
Interesting. I wonder if... I feel like the people who are taking a different tact rather than simplifying it... Well, I mean, they're simplifying it in a way, but Harmonix and what they've done with Rock Band.
Yeah.
I mean, they're making every single Rock Band is simultaneously more streamlined and more complicated.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally to the point where you can plug in a real guitar to play Rock Band
and just shred it to Freebird.
Apparently, except that I would be terrible at it because I have no idea how to play guitar.
Yeah.
But it's kind of helping to connect that idea that you can do something in a game for yourself, but there is a broader application. It's not just closing yourself off.
You know, I'm not so sure, though. Like, I see what you're saying in theory with what Harmonix is doing, but, you know, I was having a talk with David Carlton a while ago when he was up here for GDC.
Yeah.
And the pro guitar is not something that is being heavily marketed.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, it's kind of faded off of people's radar.
Mm.
The same thing happened with Harmonix's intent to open up the make-your-own music kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of hope and excitement around that when it was first announced, because people believed that small independent artists whom they loved would make their songs into Rock Band songs and let them play it. And that never really happened. That never really came to fruition.
I wonder why.
I mean, there's all sorts of licensing issues and ease of access. I have no idea what the interface looks like for that.
Yeah.
But the point being is Harmonix did offer that, but I don't think they succeeded in expanding this connection between people who approach Rock Band as a simple experience and people who see it as something that holds a lot of complexity.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the two are...
They didn't meet at
the
end.
Didn't meet.
Yeah. Maybe Rock Band 4.
Maybe, but I mean, the fact that, I mean, we're getting a little bit off topic here, but the fact that Harmonix laid off a bunch of employees, I'm sure it's natural, but, you know, also with the death of Guitar Hero, I can't help but feel that's sort of like the death knell of music games as we know them today.
Mm.
And the idea that, this is what will bring people into the medium, I think is no longer a possibility.
It's brought everyone that it was going to bring for now. And it'll take kind of another huge shift.
I'm not so sure it brought people that far in.
Yeah, I mean, other than maybe as a novelty, like a Wii style thing.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, you'll see like a Rock Band set up in a bar or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Real quick, I also want to talk a bit about. I think there is a feeling, and it's not just in video games. I think it's something that everyone in an industry that doesn't address real world issues in some way feels. And that is a sense of guilt that they're not making the world a better place in some way. Mm. And, you know, I've met a lot of people who are, you know, progressive or forward thinkers, yeah, or, you know, conservatives, what have you.
Yeah.
There's always a sense that what you're doing in your day-to-day job or through your hobbies is not good enough.
Mm.
You're not acting in the interest of the world. You are doing something selfish. And I think that feeling is really natural, you know? So to some extent, I don't want to only emphasize that the feeling that Michelle in this article is talking about comes between two relationships, but I think it's a feeling that both gamers and game designers feel themselves,
mm-hmm,
you know? And again, I don't think that's unnatural. I think that's something everyone feels.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know what you think the power of that feeling is and whether or not that's something that plays into how gamers see themselves as people who may or may not be selfish.
Yeah. I mean, it is, I think, especially when we're so focused on evaluating everything financially, like, what is the bottom line of your hobby? Are you, you know, are you alleviating poverty visibly?
Yeah.
Are you adding to someone's bottom line? Are you monetizing every single thing that you can be doing?
Yeah.
And it's hard to place a concrete value on art. You know, like, what are you actually, like, could you be spending that $50 on something else that would enrich your life more or enrich someone else's life more?
Yeah.
And it's one of those intangible things. It's really hard to measure. And I don't know. I don't have a good response to that. I mean, at some point you have to have faith that there is inherent value in art because unexpected things can come out of it.
Yeah, and I think that's also why, to go back to the social gaming issue and even the sort of gamification and backlash against, you know, the work of Jane McGonigal and some of the people who are very optimistic about what games can be.
Yeah.
I think you get this genuine fear from people that even within the games industry, there are people who are making games unethically,
mm-hmm,
you know, who are exploiting people's desire to get stupid rewards and all that kind of stuff. So I think you even get some people who believe, even if there is a value in art, am I making good enough art?
Yeah.
Is my art pushing the sort of the boundaries of what is necessary and to be valuable to those who play them?
Mm-hmm.
Even if you believe that fun is the pure intention of video games and all you want them to do is to draw away your attention from the day-to-day drudgery,
yeah,
I think people often have to ask themselves, am I even succeeding in that regard?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Because if you aren't...
Yeah, because
then, because
if you aren't, one, you're not doing the best that you can, but two, maybe you're being selfish again, you know, maybe you're just doing it for the money.
Yeah.
And there are people who have worked for major studios and then left because they felt exactly that way.
Yeah.
That what they were making wasn't good, they weren't making good games, and they were just doing it for the money, and that wasn't satisfying to them,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think oftentimes it comes down to, no matter what industry you're in, is, you know, do whatever you do and be as ethical in as many ways as possible while you do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think the fact that we are in a medium that emphasizes fun, I think sometimes we forget that how we make things and the ethics of what we do is kind of pushed off to the side.
Mm. Yeah. So does that mean we have to give all of our listeners free stuff?
We do. Steam? That's exactly right. Yeah.
But no, we're not going to. We're not.
We're not. No. But, you know, I mean, even you and I, right? Like, as writers and podcasters, there are times where it's like, maybe I'm not paying enough attention to this aspect of the industry, or,
mm-hmm,
maybe I'm not writing enough about race or gender or other serious issues.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I'll write about, I don't, like, League of Legends. Like, I've written way too much about League of Legends.
Sure.
And yeah, sometimes I get the sense that maybe I'm just not doing my part. And I think that that's an interesting thing to examine.
Well, it's also even guilt is an interesting thing. It is a motivator.
Yeah.
As long as you don't let it consume you. There's an idea that if we didn't do this podcast and write and play video games and do all that stuff, it's not like that time would be automatically allocated to better things.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
We might just sit around and watch infomercials or whatever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a fallacy that you are necessarily exchanging something.
Yes, that's true.
Which is always, I think, important to... It's always better to create something than think about the potential lost thing that you could have or did never create.
Yeah.
I think that's my... that's my way of protecting myself at the end of the podcast.
Because even if I am being selfish now, it doesn't mean I would be not selfish doing something else.
I'd be more selfish if I wasn't doing this.
Yeah.
I'm just minimizing
it. Yeah, at least we're giving back, right?
Okay, is there anything else that we should give away here before we...
I think we've covered it.
If you want to write in with your thoughts or any questions, experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
We also encourage you to leave your thoughts in the comment section to this podcast, as well as any of our posts. We update the site Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday evenings. That is experiencepoints.net. And I don't know, I don't think we've said it in a while, but if you ever want to find us on like Twitter.
Oh yeah.
Twitter.com/JAlbor.
Twitter.com/SJuster.
And Shen4891 on pretty much all gaming platforms.
I have various ones that I don't keep up with, but I'll tell you them someday.
You one of these days.
Yeah.
So come on by experiencepoints.net.
All right. Take it easy.
Bye.